Okay. Chairman Brad Holton, I'll bring the meeting to order. We have a 1:30 start time on fiscal year 2027 budget workshops. And let's start with misdemeanor probation, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Commissioners, Clerk of the Staff. I appreciate you having me present the FY27 requested budget for misdemeanor probation. I'm just going to kind of do a high-level overview of the department today. The FY27 budget narrative has a lot more detail in it in terms of like statistics, department functions. So if you've seen something in there that you have a question on, please just stop me as I go and I can give you a little more information.
Okay.
So thinking about the themes that are kind of affecting us as we go into FY27, the main themes that you're going to see me talk about today that are impacting our department have to do with workload, staffing, data management, and technology. And in some of these instances, technology isn't reducing our workload, but it's actually adding to it. We're also seeing more and more being expected of probation officers than what has been expected in the past. And that's probably true of any job in the county. If you ask somebody, well, is there more to do in your job today than there was 2 years ago? They're all gonna say yes. And that's true for us as well. Mm-hmm. So our challenge is, we're seeing a number of offenders growing on probation over the past couple of years. So when we finished April, we had 1,114 offenders on active supervision. We had another 533 on bench warrant status, and we had 214 offenders in the community service program. So when we're fully staffed, we have 8 probation officers that are covering all of that workload. In addition to that, we have 12 courtrooms that we cover on a weekly basis. And at times we get special sets that add to that workload, which in essence is a judge saying, I'm gonna have another special court day this week.
Right.
And we've also had a challenge with filling and retaining probation officers, which is, it's really necessitated the assistant director and myself to have to carry a caseload. We really are finding ourselves, in all frankness, we're competing against every agency in the valley for what I would call as a smaller number of serious candidates who have the skills and the desire to do this job well. Realistically, we all kind of see like a younger generation of workers are wanting a different kind of career. They don't necessarily want a job that, I'm gonna give you a great example. And this wasn't a younger worker, but this was a guy that left us that kind of decided the job wasn't a fit for him. And I had some sense that we were in trouble about 2 weeks in when I was meeting with him, and he said, you know, I'm really just uncomfortable talking with people. I'm like, well, you are really in the wrong job because that's all you're gonna do all day long. But it's a job that's face-to-face, it's real-time, and there's a certain amount of conflict in that. And there's a smaller number of workers that are coming into the workplace that really want to do that. So we're competing against that. We're even competing against our own sheriff's office for these folks. So some of the other agencies, though, like, for example, that I see us in, that have done things to make themselves more attractive. You look at Ada County, they have a STEP program for the first 5 years of employment where they move them up on the scale each year as they meet different career objectives in those first 5 years. Department of Correction, they have raised their starting wage to $26.60 an hour. Our starting wage is $25.11 an hour. We're also competing against agencies that can offer a hybrid option. I'll give you a couple of examples. We had a new PO we hired. She worked for us for a month and quit to go work as a pre-sentence investigator because they would let her work from home half of the week. We had another longer serving PO that left to go to the State Department of Insurance to be a fraud investigator because they would let her work from home 3 days a week as she was trained. So we're kind of finding ourselves kind of battling this idea of what the new career looks like and what people want. And in reality of that shrinking pool of people that really want to do it. Because I think the other challenge we have is a probation officer is not necessarily an entry-level job. It's a job that kind of requires a little bit more skills, but overwhelmingly, our applicant pool is people with very entry-level skills. So those are just some of the things we're facing on the personnel side of things. Another thing that we face is we manage a large amount of data. It is kind of dumbfounding how much data comes into that department. And how we get that data has changed a lot. It used to be that getting this data was a very passive process on our part. When I started 18 years ago, we had this little fax machine in the back, and it literally ran all day long. And POs would just come along, oh, this one's this person. And they just put it in boxes, and they stuff more paper in the fax machine, and just ran and ran and ran. And POs would look at it, oh, I need to follow up on this, or I don't, in the file. And then it transitions a little bit more, and then data becomes more, oh, we're still feeding it to you passively, you're getting emails, you're getting electronic faxes. You know, we take it in, we process it, we make a notation on the new database that we had at that time, which is CMS, saying we got it, and this little brief summary of it. And then it contributes to change, and also, well, we got to save this stuff. We've got to save these documents because courts expect us to have these, attorneys expect us to have these. And really now what we've seen in the past maybe 5 years is we've seen a real evolution to nobody's feeding us this data anymore. We've got to go find it. Providers have really shifted to a portal method where this provider has a portal, and that provider has a portal, this treatment provider, and you've got to log in and you've got to go search for the data. So what we're seeing is we're seeing tasks that, you know, here we're just kind of feeding you to now we've got to go find it, we've got to search for it, we've got to retrieve it, we've got to save it, we've got to review it. And all those things are just simply adding man hours. So that's kind of that example of like, or to some degree, and I'm certainly not advocating going back to the fax machine running all day and paper files, but that's kind of one of those examples of where, to some degree, technology is adding to our workload as much as it's helping us in doing our job better. And one of the other challenges that we really have is we have a transition out of our old server-based CMS program. That's going away. Now, largely, we operate in Odyssey, but we have a certain number of cases. I think right now there's like 8 or 9 that are interstate compact cases that other states have sent in. And we can't receive money for those cases through Odyssey. So we do it in this old system in CMS. When we also receive old collections cases, because originally we actually received all cost of supervision through CMS. And we stopped doing that probably in 2011. When we transferred to all going to iStars. Well, we are still getting collections checks on these old cases prior to that, like 2008 cases, 2009 cases. And we use that to receive money and deposit money. And then, surprisingly enough, we still get public records requests on these old closed cases. So, it's very interesting, but that's something we're going to have to solve because that is going away for us. And we've got some options to look at here. This next one is just an easy slide that kind of shows the last 4 years of probation case history where you can really kind of look and just see the trends of the workload is going up on those active probation cases. And you always see different months kind of fluctuate a little bit as you get the as summer cases make their way and they get sensed in December and we see the bump. But that's just kind of an example. And there's a lot more in the budget narrative that kind of breaks down some more of those numbers for us. This one is our last 4 years of cost of supervision collections. And honestly, this is just pretty much like looking into a crystal ball. I can't explain to you why FY23, the collections was where it was and why FY24, it dropped so much. And then FY25, it spikes again. I don't know. There's always different things that go into affecting that. But when we look at FY26 to date, we are having a really good year in terms of collections. So for FY26, I forecasted that we'd collect $448,445 in cost of supervision. At the end of April, we're already at almost $402,000. And if you look in your budget narrative at the cost of supervision strategy, you'll see that it really starts off level, you get a big spike over tax season, drops off. That is the byproduct of the tax intercept program. And this year, wow, I don't know what happened, but I have never seen collections like that off of the intercept program, not even close to that. So it really shows you how much we really depend on it. And really, the clerk's office does all the heavy lifting on that, putting those cases in there and intercepting them. But it's really a huge benefit for us. So for FY27, I'm forecasting conservatively $462,046. And then for the workers' comp fee, and I talk about that a little bit more in the budget narrative that comes off of the community service program, I'm forecasting just over $10,000 in that. So both of those are fairly conservative estimates, and who knows where the rest of this year is going to go, but I think we're well underway to surpassing our forecast for this year. Okay, so I'm really only kind of touching on the new request for FY27. The other stuff is in the budget narrative. I got like the little comments in there that for the lines that just minorly went up or went down. So I am requesting a new probation officer position, and that's would include with salary benefits. That would be $91,487. We need another $2,400 for computer equipment, and that's specifically broken down in the little comment sections for those things, and then $1,500 for the ballistic vest, which is already kind of already built into the what we already have anyways. $15,600 to do a replacement of 6 laptops and 3 desktop scanners. And desktop computers, not scanners. And that's on the IT replacement schedule.
Okay.
I have another $1,800 to replace 3 desktop scanners for the front office staff. And their scanners, what I've kind of gotten is that they're a more expensive scanner because they actually interact more with workspace. And I guess workspace's requirements for it are much more stringent than what the POs need for Odyssey. Requesting an additional $700 into the meals line to send staff to the IJJA conference next year. That'll be in Eastern Idaho. Don't know if exactly it'll be Idaho Falls, Fort Hall, or Pocatello, but one of those. And this one is still pending IT's review. But this is kind of like we talked about the possible solutions to the interstate compact fees. So the first solution, and I was really surprised when I got this number. I don't have that in. I got these numbers after I'd already submitted my budget, so I'll inform you. But CMS, and this is for 3 licenses, so we would be looking at just the 3 office staff, front office staff, having access to transitioning to the cloud for CMS. It'd be $860 a year for a support license fee for those 3 folks. And then there's another $35,000 that would be split between us, juvenile detention and juvenile probation for the complete transition to the program. When I was really surprised, I thought it was a really reasonable amount that they quoted us for ongoing support. I did reach out because I anticipated them suggesting much more money for it. So I talked to IT. They said they could build us a program to receive money. They did say there is a backlog of projects. So I don't know what the timeline is for, and I don't even know if the board thinks it's important enough that you want to tie IT up doing that. And then probably the third option, if you don't like the CMS option or the IT option, would be to just not charge interstate compact offenders cost of supervision. But I'd probably suggest going with the CMS option. I was really surprised, and juvenile detention and juvenile probation is going to go that direction anyways. So I think that's a good. Do you guys have any questions on the new request before I bolt forward?
So your $35,000 is really 1/3 of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be split between all 3 of the departments.
Yeah, well, the other 2 will pay up.
I've got confidence.
We know those guys. That
I've got confidence in Sean.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and the $860 would be ongoing every year. But
right. Is the license fee split 3 ways too, or is it individual?
They have their own amount. So okay. I don't have that sitting in front of me. Sean will probably cover it in his, but they are quoted more for that. So their license fee is going to be much more because all of their staff are on it.
Oh, okay.
All of my staff are using Odyssey. We just literally are going to have 3 people, the front office staff, who can receive money that are going to have access to this.
Okay.
That's why we're getting a deal, is because not everybody like myself, I won't have access to it.
Okay. Good to move on? Let's do it.
All right. And then this is just kind of how, the FY27 requested is up compared to the FY26 approved. But we did have a few lines that we actually did cut. So pre-CMS here, the main difference is the computer replacement that you see in the spike for the number that I've given on the B budget. And I'll stand for any questions, comments, or concerns that you guys have.
Comments?
Questions? Mr. Chair. Chairman, it must be the year of scanners. We've had two other offices in here. Do you use the same thing or remotely close to the same thing as the assessor's office? Or
I don't know what they use. So the challenge that I have is like for example, for like the scanner that we would buy for the new position if you gave us a new position, that one's relatively cheap. Like the challenge that we have with these new ones, and I'm sure Jess could give a more intelligent answer since he's run the courts forever. But like with Workspace, it requires a higher end scanner. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Chairman, Commissioners. Yeah, what Jeff's referring to is with the recent move with the Supreme Court moving to their own network, which is something they decided to do last year. I've been in front of you several times requesting numerous different things to coincide with that initiative. But to make a long technical story really short, their system requires our scanners to be network scanners rather than just your standard peripheral scanner, which can just scan documents basically, you know, to your computer. These scanners have to be able to scan documents directly to a network. So it allows us to scan, and what that basically does for us is it allows you to scan documents directly to Odyssey, which now exists on their network in the cloud, not on our network physically. We had to replace every single scanner for every single employee the last fiscal year. We luckily had a grant that Kyle and the auditor's offices had found for us last year that we were able to utilize to buy those scanners. But yeah, that coincides with what Jeff's request is here.
Yeah, and those are the original scanners that we got in 2017 when we transitioned to Odyssey. So I hear them squeaking quite a bit.
Other questions?
I have a question, Chairman, but I do want to say thank you. I recognize that in certain industries, when we were in the dairy industry, nobody wanted to milk cows at 2:30 in the morning. So they go find other things to do, construction jobs, where you can work regular daylight hours. So it appears, what I hear you saying, is that the pool of educated, qualified people to come in and do this is shrinking. Thank you for doing the job, and you've had a stability with your assistant director, which is nice. And you've got, it should be an incentive for people with a nice facilities upgrade that we did for that. That I think is a big win, but still, it's difficult work because human relationships are sometimes challenging, but anyway, I appreciate your stability at the county and you.
So I want to have a tenuous conversation on income since you're wanting this much increase. Do we have other opinions besides yourself that could weigh in on potential revenue? I heard you say, and I saw the graph of the randomness of that, but I'm not excited about being super conservative on an income when I have a year like this and I can't spend what I don't show that I'm having income. So that it isn't unrealized gain. It's gain that we don't declare that we can't spend, and that puts me in a precarious situation. If a prior clerk hadn't have taken a $14 million dip in 21, we wouldn't be having this conversation, but he chose to do that, and here we are. And so we're trying to get by with a number that is minimally $14 million lower than it should be, if not quite a bit more. Does the clerk or comptroller have any opinion about that income? Is there any wiggle room to be moderate instead of conservative?
I did a 3-year average of it, so the last 3 completed years, so that's what it is. The thing that's always a challenge in doing it is so you come along and then we hit this great bump that we get on tax intercept, and then we know the summer is going to dip off.
Right.
We just don't know how much it's going to dip off because you just haven't gotten there. I mean, it's So I mean, if you'd like, I can. Yeah, I mean, I can go back and try to recalculate it. Like I said, I just kind of did the 3-year average.
Right.
What the years were. I have nothing of this year's is calculated in there. It's okay. Just simply the last 3 completed years.
So maybe we need to have you have a heart-to-heart conversation with the comptroller and the clerk and the background and see if we can see if there's any number that we could raise a little bit on the revenue and still feel that we could meet that. Again, this is not the year to be conservative on my income. And I don't want to have an inflated income either. I mean, that puts me in just as bad a spot towards the end of the year, too. So.
Yeah, I mean, you've always also got by law, you can charge up to $75 a month cost of supervision. It's sitting at 60 right now, which is what IDOC charges. You can always look at, I mean, we have to do it concurrently with the AJ about looking at raising that up to the 75 a month if you want. The only caution I'll give that I've noticed on every time we've raised cost of supervision, we sit there and go like, oh, if this many people are paying right now and they all pay the new amount, it's going to give us this much more. We never realize that increase because simply you have more people that say, I'm just not going to pay. So by doing that, you would get an increase. It wouldn't be as big an increase as probably what you would look out on paper and say you're going to get, though. If history holds up, that is.
Yeah, Chairman, Commissioners, yeah, I think I have a unique perspective for working in the courts as long as I have, and our two departments work very closely together. It is the nature of getting these monies from you know, outstanding court and probation fines is just very random. It's very hard to predict. The biggest portion that we see, that, you know, quite honestly, is during tax intercept, which I don't know the rhyme or reason as to how the State Tax Commission you know, goes after those funds, in what manner they decide to take at what time. I mean, you'll see if you were to look at this week's tax intercept monies that we received, you'll see ones from a case from 6 months ago, and then you'll see intercepted monies from a case from 1990. That's just the way it is, and then we might not get monies again for that 1990 case for 10 years, and then we'll get, you know, another $5 from it 10 years later. So I don't know how that formula works. I don't know how they're taking that money, but it is a large sum of money, but it is rather unpredictable. And then, you know, collections, you know, the collection agency that we work with, they tend to draw quite a bit of money as well. But getting monies from court fines and fees, it's not easy. And we're not out here making cold calls to folks asking them to pay their fines and fees. But other than that, it's just I wish there was maybe another mechanism in the judiciary where it would incentivize these folks to pay their outstanding monies. But this has been a conversation with the legislature, too. I know recently we had a meeting that involved the local judges in District 3. And one of the main topics of conversation was outstanding court fines and fees and what the legislature can do to help that those outstanding monies get paid. But that's just kind of where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, another great example is Post. I mean, they rely on different fees that are associated with criminal cases, and that the legislature has just decided that stuff is what's going to fund police officer training in the state, and they're always in a poverty state of trying to figure out what they're going to cut because those revenues never come in with what, I don't know, they never realize the revenue that the legislature thinks that they're going to be realized when it comes down to actually people paying. And you do run into the reality too that, I mean, the courts can waive those fees too, based on feeling that somebody has the inability to pay or indigent. We do see people, they have their fees waived. It's a hard one to predict. Like, for example, like I can't even begin to explain it to you. I mean, if we were to go back to the one slide where you had, I think it was FY, was it 24? Or it was like 23 was up here, and then all of a sudden 24 is down here for the collections, and then 25's. I can't even begin to explain to you why 24 looked that way.
think my frustration is, it's supposed to be structured, it's, it isn't a pay to play, but you got sentenced and you pay, set up, and then you're coming before me and I'm going to have to tax the property owners to compensate for a judicial decision or a state mandated service that should be pay to play.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at the code, the legislature has put in there that they use the county, you only have to provide misdemeanor probation services as far as the cost of supervision revenues allow. I mean, you could sit there and say, I mean, there was a scenario many years ago in Clearwater County that what the collections were the month prior depended on how many hours that probation officer worked the next month. You do have that option of like, and originally too, I mean, when we were going through the Great Recession, I mean, this department was funded solely off of cost of supervision. I mean, you're probably not going to get much on that kind of a formula when you look at like even just what the salaries are for the number of people that we have, which I think is still pretty minimal. Right. And then in comparison to what you collect, it's a hard spot to be in as the county.
It is at that. Well, if you could do that between now and when we'd have the opportunity to reschedule you in,
okay.
See if we could see what the income could do against what the increase in request is.
So do you want me to look at like a new, revenue forecast, or are you asking me to look at what raising it to $75 a month would be? Which is it that you're asking?
I don't know what I'm asking. Yes,
Kyle? Chairman, Commissioners, I can attest to the numbers that the director has presented, and I even went back another like 3 years, and those numbers actually only make it go down a little bit. And also, like the director said, the 1 year it looked really good, and then the next year it went down 30K, and then the next year it went back up, and then it back down, and then so going back farther it only kind of made it go down a little bit more.
Yeah, I think when you look at it too, I mean, one of the things that's kind of interesting about the misdemeanor probation world. As if you're really bad, you get supervised probation. Or in the felony world, if you're really bad, you get prison. So there's a certain number of these folks that you're getting on supervised probation that they're not great candidates for probation to begin with. It's just, you know, what do we do to try to manage these people in the community if you're looking at it from the prosecutor or the judge's perspective, and then balancing it out with limited jail space. And yeah, I mean, there's a certain number of people that walk through that door every day, and you just know you're never going to get anything out of them. Like, they're either flat out not going to do it, or they really don't have the ability to do it. So you've also got that hard dynamic that you're with, and I think you find as things kind of trend up and down, that number of that population has been kind of going up. I mean, like I said, I'm really surprised at our collections this year. They look amazing. But there's just a certain number of those folks that are just kind of that habitual misdemeanor offender, that just keep getting sent back and back. Or the person that I would kind of describe as like the mental health public nuisance, right, to the county, more than necessarily the criminal of the county. We get quite a few of those as well.
Right. Comments? Questions? How would you proceed?
Chairman, this morning, all I can say is that the budget presentations that we've had for hard costs, not even considering the salaries, everybody's up because the price of contracts is up, cost of supplies is up. So I continue to hear this board, if there was any legislator listening, saying that the caps that have been put on of 8% in an environment that's growing faster than 8% is difficult to provide services with what we're doing. I don't see anybody coming in. This is one of the more conservative budgets that we've seen come in with a defined need. It is a challenging budget year. There's no question about it.
So Kyle, am I understanding that what I'm asking is really not going to be fruitful?
Outside of what the director mentioned of increasing the fee, like looking back at the historical, like I said, I went all the way back to 2019, just sitting here and looking at the actuals. And like I said, the patterns even through, like 21 was 468, 22 was 435, and then the next year went up to 462 and then back down and then
I saw that.
Back up. So as you said, as of right now, they seem to be doing well, but it could be very fickle the next couple months. And
cash flow, yeah. Sound looks like it. Yeah, summer's bad.
Right, yeah. So it's, I would love to have it to be, you know, a more easily predictable
right.
thing on what we're doing. But I would say, you know, the information that the director's provided, I don't know if there's much, you know, more wiggle room that I can see from kind of what he's done.
Okay. Then, clerk, on the, if we considered the increase to say 70 or 75, so there's a real live percentage of that that's never going to be realized out of the numbers.
Yeah, Chairman.
Is it worth rocking the boat, or do we?
Chairman, I think there's always room for conversation, and I think if you're going to bring in the ADJ and have this discussion and have a real numbers discussion about, you know, our budgets and the cost of doing business, I think it's something that the ADJ and, you know, the state as an extension needs to hear. Whether or not it would be fruitful revenue-wise, it could be. The nature of court fines and fees is just so unpredictable. And I can't say that, you know, raising the fines and fees would make people pay any less. It might even balance out where maybe you would have a certain percentage of people pay, you know, completely skip their fines. You might have some people pay, which you'd get that increase on. I just don't know if that there's a good answer. I know that people in the legislature have considered like a debtor's court, going back to debtor's court. But if you think of our situation in Canyon County, that doesn't do us any benefit. We don't have the jail space to put people in jail if they can't pay their fines and fees. So I don't know what the answer is, you know, aside from, you know, us cold calling people and becoming a collection agency ourselves, which no sane person wants to do that. None of my staff would be comfortable cold calling, you know, people that owe money, trying to squeeze a penny out of them. And I'm sure Jeff feels similarly. That's not a fun thing to do.
Chairman, I mean, these are folks that are also seeing their PO on a regular basis.
Yes.
The other challenge that you're trying to balance is you compare us to IDOC. Okay, so IDOC is charging $60 a month. Well, IDOC is, the state's also paying drug testing costs for these folks. The state's also paying for treatment costs for these folks. There's nobody paying that for our folks. Our folks are paying $20 every time they have the drug test. Our folks are paying, what is it to go to domestic violence treatment a week?
$13.
Plus their intake. I mean, is, you know, some of them are getting the benefit off of Medicaid expansion that it's helping with some of the SUDs, the substance abuse disorder treatment. But even that's kind of like, those folks are even getting kicked off of that. So, I mean, not to be a bleeding heart here, but these folks are also, they're absorbing a lot of costs that the felons are not absorbing in terms of paying for their probation and their treatment.
Okay.
It's not a great scenario on either end, but that's the other thing that you're also trying to balance.
And you may have a judiciary that if the cost was raised, they may feel more inclined to have people exempt from that fee if they do feel it is, you know, more than necessary. So that's something to consider as well.
I do know that, like, that how much it costs somebody to be on misdemeanor probation is a concern that judges and attorneys have, because I hear that on a fairly regular basis from people, and it just costs so much for them to be on probation for a misdemeanor. Versus it wouldn't cost them this much to be on probation for a felony.
But I do think, Chairman, it may be worth a conversation with ADJ Whitney and the TCA staff to see what their thoughts are.
Let's do that, because I could feel if I was on the other end of this microphone and the state had allowed up to $75 and I'm having to cut to make the spread up with property taxes, I'm going to be one smoking hot person about that, because I'm doing the right thing. I got a nice house, and I'm paying property taxes. Now I'm going to get raised a little bit more on property taxes because somebody made a mistake, got into the system. I'm helping compensate them compared to what the state says I can charge.
Sure.
That's the perplexing place I find myself in. I'm hearing the difficulties that it's not that straightforward. I get that part. I would like to proceed.
Chairman, I just think we take the budget under advisement, and you know, the same frustration was expressed when we had the assessor's meeting that some of the administrative fees, it's, we don't know if the state's going to take everything, so the revenue projections on that are difficult to assess, and I think that our directors and EOs are doing a good job, but there's a lot that hinges on the state, and when fees are set in statute and we can't correct for that, again, in a growing county with a changing climate, it's pretty tough. It doesn't leave us with a lot of options, except to just, it's a puzzle, and we're gathering the pieces to put it together. It's going to be difficult.
Well, you're willing to walk down that road with me and see where
I think it's a valuable conversation to have and to take the temperature of the judiciary in terms of like, I mean, I would probably say if like you get a bunch of feedback from like, well, you're asking too much of people, I mean, you're probably going to be looking at them waiving a lot of fees.
Right.
But if not, I mean, it may be worth it. I mean, Ada County charges $75 a month.
Right.
And there's a couple of counties in eastern Idaho that do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also counties in eastern Idaho that charge $35 a month.
Right.
I mean, it's cost of supervision rates are all over the board across the state.
Just put those $35 a month places on the website and go commit crimes down there. So
you'd be surprised.
Brilliant idea.
Well, there you go.
Surprise the volume of those cases that get sent to us of Canyon County residents.
I see.
At times it's staggering the number of courtesy supervision cases that get sent into us from other counties, from Canyon County residents that are committing crimes throughout the state.
Mm.
And it's not this, I mean, we get a lot of Ada cases, and we get a lot of PAYA cases, but you would be shocked at the number of Twin Falls County cases I get, and the, you know, Jerome County. And,
yeah.
And there's a lot of people that are going to jackpot and get in trouble all the way back.
Yeah. Bless their hearts. All right. Okay, we can take this under advisement? And
yes, sir. Yep.
Do you have any closing statements?
I don't.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Thanks for being here.
We're good?
Thank you.
All right.
Recess?
Let's adjourn and take a 5-minute recess, and then we'll start back here in just a few minutes. Thank you.
Thanks.